All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to another episode of the Wheel Wednesday podcast. I'm Scott from Koenig, and this is my boy, Jared from Koenig.
That's me.
Yeah. We have a cool guest today.
We do indeed. It is Paco Ibarra of 2F Performance.
Yes.
Who also co-hosts Maximum Driftcast.
Yeah. Yeah, Paco's got a super extensive resume, especially when it comes down to... He's trying to get admitted. But Paco's got a super extensive resume, especially when it comes into the drifting world, because in addition to the Maximum Driftcast, he does the halftime shows for Formula Drift. So if you watch the live stream, there's no doubt that you've seen him there. And yeah, it's kind of cool to have him on here just because he's the master of podcasts, and we're just kind of like, we're the juniors,
right,
of starting something.
And I'm actually especially glad to have him because he shares a weird passion for weird cars. That's the other thing for me.
Yeah, so. I think that if you have seen his YouTube channel or some of his social, I think that kind of definitely holds true.
So why don't we bring him in?
Do it.
Paco, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for doing this, man.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, man. I haven't been in a podcast for a long time, so it's actually interesting being the guest this time.
You sure you remember how to do it?
Maybe. I mean, I'll follow. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. So what's up with the Maximum Driftcast? You guys just kind of on hiatus a little bit with everything kind of being up in the air with the FD?
Yeah, we're mostly do Formula Drift related content. So with the whole COVID, obviously, and not being able to have a lot of events and a lot of small grassroots events getting canceled, all this stuff, it's kind of hard to have something to talk about.
Yeah.
And we thought we're gonna be like, oh well, everybody's at home, we're gonna be doing a lot of podcasts, but then we just realized that it's kind of hard to have all these drivers and just ask him, so what do you eat today? And not a lot of drifting related content. We had a few episodes with a few drivers, but it was such a weird year that definitely kind of hard, to feel it, So we're hoping this year gets relatively back to normal and the podcast goes back to normal as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like last year, not only did you have events that were constantly changing dates, but then you had these double headers. And so it almost felt like, I mean, you were did you physically go to all the events this year?
No, we didn't go to any event.
Right. So it's like watching even these drivers and speaking to a lot of the drivers that would go from event to event. Yes, it was two events, but it almost played like one really long event with an intermission. So it was kind of interesting to kind of see them kind of have to do all that work,
Yeah. Yeah, for us, this was like the first year, I'd say, that we actually get a chance to be spectators, we actually get a chance to just be fans and watch the whole thing going on. And it was crazy because, everybody's on a rush. Eight rounds in, three, 4 months. And you can tell, the drivers in their faces, they're just, exhausted.
Yeah.
And they're just pushing hard. And you can see it on the commentators, Jared and Ryan. And, everybody's just like, please, we need a break to get this done. So, I mean, kudos Formula Drift to being able to pull it off. Because they had a lot of, blocks and last-minute changes. And they managed to get it done.
Yeah, with all the criticism that Formula Drift takes on, the one thing that I don't think anybody can criticize them with is trying to work as hard as they did to bring a show to so many people. There was just too many moving pieces. And, we deal with it on the manufacturing side, as I'm sure you do too. But
yeah.
there was so many moving pieces this year when it came down to events. I mean, they would have events that were scheduled and municipalities entitled would change these rules, and a lot of these rules weren't really super clear at the time they were happening. So yeah. Like, how do you move with that? It was they really worked their tails off to be able to put this plan together.
Yep. Yeah, and it was very weird because, like you said, you know, like we're staying home as a podcast, but then 2F as a business, we were actually incredibly busy.
Yeah.
And we were expecting kind of like, well, I mean, this year is going to be slow, and this was probably our best year so far.
Yeah, there's a lot of companies in the automotive scene that really had that experience happen to them. And I think there was so much stimulus money that was there where for some people that were fortunate enough to continue to have jobs or at least be in a stable situation, they were able to put that money into some of the free time that they had by actually buying parts and trying to continue forward with their builds. So a lot of companies saw an upside to that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was necessarily the stimulus, because I think people also need to eat.
Yeah.
But at least the first stimulus, coincidentally, is basically the same amount of money that we charge for a full kit. I don't know.
Right.
What a coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, I swear we don't have any 2F lobbyists in Washington. But I think also had a lot to do with, like, people just being at home and being bored. Yeah. And, you know, like, wanting to put time on their cars.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really think a lot of cars got off the jack stands this year.
Right.
Yeah. Right. That famous meme that's like, when is the car going to get finished?
Yeah.
And, yeah. You
know, the running joke is that it never does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not this time around.
I don't know. It was I would start with projects and start working on stuff, and I felt like there was just some things I couldn't get certain parts on. I felt like that was my holdup. Even if I was ready to go, I just couldn't quite get what I needed.
Right.
But so how was it with 2F? So quick, before we even get into that,
yes.
Give people like a quick synopsis of kind of how you arrived into the 2F, you know, and brought everything to reality.
Yeah. Well, my parents met and they fell in love.
Right.
Eventually, yeah. You know, I have a degree. I'm a designer.
Okay.
And but I work as a civil engineer in a construction company, so nothing to do with design.
Right.
So in my mind, I always had like this, you know, the creativity just inside, you know, I kind of like wanted to like do something, you know, something that will look good, or I don't know, whatever. Just I needed to design something.
Yeah, you wanted to
create. And at that time I was starting going to the local drift events. I had a C5 Corvette.
Okay.
And I was trying to drift that car because obviously there's not a lot of. At that point there was not a single anything drift related for Corvettes. So the car. Very grippy, very well balanced. It didn't really want it to drift, you know. So in trying to practice, trying to learn the car and all that, I accidentally hit a curb one time in an empty road, obviously. And it messed up my front bumper. So at that point, I was like, well, you know what? Let me design a new bumper. And that's where I came up with the idea of making which at that point we call the C5.5 front bumper. Everybody keeps telling me I'm showing the C5.6 bumper because it goes to the next generation. But my idea was just like the C5 Corvette, it was just a rounded up C4. It's basically the same car. They just made everything round.
Right.
You know, they had the plate cover. It had like the same visual elements that been carrying on since the 80s. So in my opinion, the whole car is a very beautiful, very smooth-looking car, but the front bumper was extremely busy, extremely saturated with elements. And at that time, the C6 was already what was the car, the current Corvette. And I just like how good it looked with a big opening in the front and, you know, just smooth. There's really only three elements in the front, and that's it. So I was like, well, what if GM had actually made the C5 Corvette thinking this with the same vision, you know, just clean slate, let's not base our car on the C4. And that's kind of how I came up with a C5.5 bumper and made it myself, got the molds made and started selling them. And it was a success. And it was a funny thing is like, I would take my car to like Corvette car shows and people would look at it. It was like, I don't know what's different. What is it about it? It looks different. It looks good, but I can't tell because it still looked like a Corvette. Right. So it didn't look like, you know, like a Honda with a rice bumper, you know? So it got mixed opinions from people. You know, Corvette people tend to be very purist. So yeah, right. Obviously a lot of people didn't like it, but a lot of people loved it. So it started selling a lot. And because I was also in the drifting scene, like a funny thing about that time is when I sold my Corvette because people didn't like me because, you know, how dare you bring a Corvette to a drift event?
Right.
8 years ago, 9 years ago. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll bring a minivan. And I started drifting my Previa minivan.
That's the logical next step.
It's the only progression, right? Like, exactly. So after doing that, that's where I met Chris Soren, who he was already doing some parts for Forest Wang. So Forest Wang is the actual creator of the actual name Super Doof.
Oh, okay.
So this was Forest had an idea of using an existing body kit that you couldn't find anymore because the brand went away.
Right.
And modifying it and like making changes. So it wouldn't be the same kit, but it will be more aggressive and it'll be more, it'll be according to his style, you know, according to his flair. He's a very, you know, big wheels, great offset, you know, chrome everything. So Chris Soren was already working with him on this idea. And I already had the brand 2F Performance. So we hooked up and we had a baby and we called that, you know, 2F Performance. And since then, basically that's where we started making body kits for more drift cars and following the same tendency and the same style that Forrest wanted to bring to his car. So, basically, it's a mix of many things, many circumstances. Obviously, Forrest Wang, big influence on why, even I mean, just the name of the body kit is his brainchild. So
yeah,
yep. It's
cool to have that whole piece. So when you started to plan this whole, the Corvette, the first, you know, C5 bumper that you embarked on, did you sit down and like actually physically sketch it out, or did you kind of like start playing with it physically, like on the car with stuff?
Yes, I did a lot of sketches, all different views, different angles, and after like most of the little sketches, I did like a render, and I put it on. I think at that time was Corvette forums. You guys remember forums?
Yeah.
So I put it out there, and a lot of people's like, "Wow, that looks great! If you make it, I want it. I want one." So, you know, it took some design, some sketching, and once I had that vision finally put on paper in a way where everybody could understand it, and everybody gave me like the approval, then I went ahead and started sculpting all myself, and some people liked it, some people didn't, but still going strong.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's crazy to see the progression of a company. So you mentioned that you do, you still currently work for the construction company doing the engineering?
Correct. Yes.
So, man, you got to...
He's a busy man.
How do you even, like, schedule all this stuff? So you got the... I'm guessing podcasts when they happen in the evenings, and then you randomly travel in a regular year to all the FD events to do the halftime shows, and then you do your regular day job and 2F Performance. So what is a normal day in the life of Paco look like? There's Wheaties involved in there somewhere, right?
I mean, yeah, and I mean, it's I'm busy, but I try to find, you know, time to smell the roses. Fortunately, I I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I'm pretty good at what I do at work.
Yeah.
So I get, you know, some freedoms where I can finish whatever I have to do, and I can go out and take a couple hour break to be on the Koenig Behind the Wheel podcast, for example.
There you go.
And it's fine because it's just, you know, like at work, they know that if I'm not there, I'll be back. And sometimes I'll be there until 8, 9, it's fine, you know, but I'll get the work done. And so with that said, I have some freedoms that I would say I couldn't have on a different job.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, there's times where, you know, like things get crazy at work and I have to be there. And as you guys know, the construction industry is pretty huge. So, yeah. You know, like you have to be there sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I it's a juggling act. I try to do as much as I can with the time that we have. And every now and then I still have time to sit down and watch some TV. But
yeah.
Nice.
Before bed, basically.
Yeah, no, right, of course. So I think one of the biggest things that I didn't know about you, so Paco and I don't know each other in like a formal capacity. We probably have a lot of mutual friends, but I know of Paco because if you are into drifting, there's no way you don't know of Paco, right? And obviously you know of 2F Performance, but what I didn't know, I mean, I knew about the minivan, but I didn't know about some of the other, I want to call them, to be nice, I want to call them eclectic vehicles that you seem to prefer and collect.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I know, Jared's looking at the screen like, okay, here we go. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I always like different cars. I think like, I feel like I find different flavors and different tastes on things that most people don't. Things that people just dismiss automatically because some website told them, or because, you know, like the trend then it wasn't accordingly to what the trend is today. I don't know. So I always had a thing for like what can I do with this car that nobody likes, that nobody recognizes, a lot of people don't even know it exists, and make something slightly cool or make it do something different.
See, this is one of my best friends.
I understand. Paco, you should understand that last week we spent an intense argument over what engine we thought would be better in his Cressida. He's on this whole other length of
you know, trying to be period correct, but sort of paying homage to the fact that the Cressida pretty much birthed Lexus in a sense, so throwing in a 1UZ instead of a, you know, built 7M.
But my whole thing is, like, if you're going to do that into a car paying to Lexus, Lexus was using every part under the sun in the beginning from a Camry. So, you know, like, you know, hey, you know, I don't know. I mean, we were talking about it. I'm like, you know, oh, you could do a 1JZ. Then he was like, no, it's not period correct. And then it was the 2G GTE.
Right.
No, the 1G GTE.
1G GTE, yeah.
I don't know. So these are the arguments we have.
I mean, like, I can talk, like, the weirdest and most nonsensical engines ever, you know, like. But they end up making sense. I mean, I remember when I thought, you know, the 1UZ was going to be the next LS.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like getting there, you know, like, I was like, hey guys, you know, like, there's a V8 right there, that there's tons of them. And everybody's like, oh, that doesn't make any power. It's like, sure. But I mean, you know, like, the necessity will, you know, what's the saying? The necessity is the mother of all creativity or something like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love originality. Like, I mean, I guess you guys know about my Aztec.
Well, see, I recently found out, to which my jaw dropped out, but listen, different strokes for different folks, I suppose.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. Have you seen a BMW X6?
Yes.
Or basically every midsize SUV in since 2015, 2017?
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I mean, the Aztek was way ahead of its time. Way ahead of its time. It's just, yeah, it had the questionable Pontiac styling, which I'm never gonna say, oh, the Aztek is beautiful. No, it's hideous.
Yeah,
it's hideous. It's but
ugly duckling.
But yeah, exactly. I mean, they were working with what they had then.
Right.
One of its biggest mistakes is because trying to stay true to the whole crossover thing, because that was one of the very first crossovers.
Right.
They based the vehicle on a minivan platform, but they left the minivan wheels and tires. So it's like a very big, fat looking thing with tiny little wheels and tires. So the proportions right there make it look awful.
But this is a car that you could get the option to have a tent on, right?
Yes. Yeah. And an air mattress.
This was the first overlanding vehicle,
if you want to call it that.
I mean, yeah, basically. I can make arguments for why the Aztek is a great vehicle all day long, but I don't think the fans of the show might want to hear that. But,
Paco,
but yeah,
this is
your
first time here, but just so you know, we don't really have any fans to our show.
Oh.
So, yeah, no, so we're fine. We
Perfect.
Yeah.
What else do you want to know about the Aztek?
Well, maybe we should move on to, you still have the Buicks, right?
Yes. Well, I had three at this point, Buick Riattas, which a lot of people don't even know what that is.
Yeah. So why?
Basically, okay, it's car came in 1988.
Right.
It's a Buick, very unexpected brand. To come up with a factory touchscreen,
right?
Digital touchscreen.
That was your selling point.
Well, that was like the original selling point. Which, funny thing, that's what actually ended up killing it, because the market then, it was like a lot of older people, they just couldn't get it. Yeah. It was like, oh, I want an old button. You know, like, what is this touchscreen nonsense? But the car in itself was very cool. This was the time where GM still, they like to gamble, you know, like they're like, okay, you know what? Let's just see what happens. Here's a two-seater car, which originally was going to have the same drivetrain of the Grand National. It was originally going to be rear-wheel drive, supercharged V6. And if it wasn't because I believe it was Motor Trend during a press test, they smashed it into a wall. And Buick decided, oh, it's too dangerous. Let's just make it front-wheel drive, get rid of the supercharger. And they just kind of made it boring.
Yeah.
But it has pop-ups. It looks like an RX-7, like an FC RX-7, just without the hatchback.
That's debatable.
Just... But okay. Dude, on an RX-7 group, I posted a photo of one of my Riattas with 20-inch wheels that I just randomly had. And I put it there, and I said, like, oh, this is my RX-7 coupe. Hope you guys like it. It was weeks until somebody said something like, wait, that's not an RX-7.
Oh, God.
I even made a meme, you know, like, week three, nobody still noticed that I'm a Buick.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. It's like those cars, like, it almost reminds me of that Cadillac Elante that was back in the day. They started, you know, Cadillac and GM, they started to play with a lot of those digitized dashboards and different pieces. So, like, I get where you're going. I mean, look, it's way better than, what Subaru is that? Help me with the
SVX?
Yeah.
Don't you dare.
Listen, I think the car was cool, but then, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It was.
I have one too.
Yeah. Well, see, now I'm starting to understand how to guess which cars Paco's owned.
Right. Right.
I mean, I bet if you mention one of the next ones that you have in your mind, I might have at some point some kind of tussle with that car. So.
Yeah.
Well, we could talk about cars forever, but what I really wanted to quickly touch on, is the C3 drift car situation you got going on. Can you talk about that or no?
You're like, no, absolutely. That car is actually a victim of COVID, because it should have been done by now.
Yeah.
And that was one of those that unfortunately at the time that the shop that I was, I had it being worked at, they had to close. And I got the car back. And while I was like looking for a different shop to work on it, that's when COVID hit. And it's been kind of sitting. I've been doing a little bit of work every here and there. But yeah, I mean, it's a C3 Corvette with a 2JZ, S14 front suspension with Wise 5 angle kit. It's right-hand drive too.
I'm sorry, what?
Yep, right-hand drive.
Okay, so this just opened up the floodgates. Now I have questions. So the first thing is, were you a big Batman, like the original Batman fan? What brought the C3? I mean, like when you were at the C5, when you were in the C5, and we understand the progression, you know, C4. But what? Where'd you go? Why the C3? There has to be a story there.
I think his fingers
out. Out of all the Corvette, I mean, I've always been a Corvette fan, and this is actually my second C3.
Right.
But I think the last generation of the C3 Corvette, 1980 to 1982, is the best looking of them. Like, where it's not too classy, because, like, you know, the C1, 2, and 3 first gens, they're classic muscle chrome, you know, rock and roll, you know, big engines. This one was the first one of the urethane bumper generation of Corvettes.
Right.
No chromes. But the last generation where they actually extended the body the widest, like make it look the more muscular, you know, it's the most Coke bottle shaped of them all.
In my opinion.
Fair. Yeah, that's actually a really good way of explaining it.
Yeah, and that was supposed to be like the whole thing about the Stingray, you know, it's like, oh, it's Coke-shaped bottle because it's sexy. And, you know, this is, you know, like 60s GM designer smoking inside a, you know, a room, like, how can I make the Corvette more appealing to men?
Yeah.
So,
but, I mean, you're doing a powertrain difference, but, I mean, arguably, people have said the C3 is the worst generation Corvette, right? Well, it was the gas crisis and the whole thing. So it got stuffed with like no power. It was a car that had 180 horsepower, if I'm right. It wasn't a, you know,
sports car.
Yeah. I mean, what happened is that the C3 has many iterations. The first generations of the C3 is big block, you know, fast cars.
Yep.
The last ones, I mean, about the middle ones, they had like a more wimpy body. We call it the pencil nose.
Right.
It's just like no flare. They started going with the smaller engines. And, you know, the very last ones, they even went fuel injected with a crossfire.
Right.
But, yeah, like you say, I mean, 200 horsepower, 180 in California because of emissions. They did have a lot of torque, and the differential helped. So they'll jump off the line fairly pretty quick, I would say, for its time. But that's precisely the thing. Like the very last generation of the C3s, they look super cool. They're super iconic. They're just not fast enough. They weren't really, you know. And I always wanted to, you know, like give one of them the opportunity to shine. And what a better way to do it than on a sport where every car looks better going sideways.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys ever seen, there's a commercial, I think it's from Quaker State or one of those oil companies, like this high mileage oil, and they have, you know, like 80s mini station wagons and all tired Oldsmobiles, and they're all doing like racing and jumping and sliding. To me, that was like the coolest thing. I was like, look at that. There's your mom's station wagon drifting in the in the dirt, and I look cool.
And now you understand drifting. Why he has all these cars.
Yeah, exactly. So like, drifting makes every car look better.
That's true.
You know, it's like a good wheel. I think, I mean, you guys are in the business of wheels.
Yeah.
And you know, have you guys seen a Ford Taurus with the right set of wheels? It looks...
Which generation Ford Taurus are we talking about?
Any. Okay. Any.
All right.
Pick the ugliest one.
Yeah.
And put like a nice set of wheels on it. Yeah. And it's like,
that are worth more than the car.
Exactly. I mean, just there's something magic about the wheels. In my opinion, wheels is the first mod that everybody needs to do on every car, obviously lower it a little
bit.
Yeah. And it changes a lot. It changes the character of the car. Like, the first thing I did when I bought my last Buick Riata is I put a Volk C28 wheels.
Oh, God.
Everybody's like, oh, that car looks so cool. It's like, yeah, put the factory wheels back on. It looks like a turd.
Right. Yeah. You're like, what? The RX-7 looks great. Yeah.
Exactly.
3 weeks later, they still don't know.
So when you put the 2J into the C3. Yeah. I'm guessing at this point you have it fitted in at least, and that's where you're at.
Yeah. So the whole front of the car was literally chopped off, rebuilt from scratch, and like there's no more old pickup truck suspension in it. It's all custom made to emulate NES14 geometry.
Got it.
So with that, you know, we had the capability of making whatever engine mount we wanted and just put the engine in place, which this is kind of like me. This is like payback, you know, like everybody complains about people putting LSs on Japanese cars.
I understand.
Right. So this is like the other way around, you know, like, okay, here's a Corvette with arguably the best Japanese engine ever made.
Oh, right. God, that's great.
And here's the thing. Like, it's not just randomly. The very first Corvette had an inline six.
Right.
So this is still pays on homage to what the Corvette could have been if they just kept doing an inline six, just better.
So basing it on an S chassis, is that how the right hand drive thing comes into effect?
No, that's totally just me. Like, so the idea, the whole build with that car is like, imagine
if they were going to make a Japanese JDM American car.
Like, you've seen Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Best movie ever. I mean, you know, like, I don't even need to say Fast and Furious. That's not that. No.
I understand.
Just Tokyo Drift. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the best movies ever made. And when they came up with that Mustang, I think it's like a 67 fastback.
Yeah.
Mustang.
RB26. Volk, I think, I can't remember the model, but I think it was Volk, had Volk wheels. I think they were C28.
I thought they were TEs, like, but either way.
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
it's some JDM wheel.
That is cool. That is cool. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, at that point, I remember, like, back in the day, you know, I always liked Camaros and Mustangs and American Muscle, and I was like, oh, man, I would like to put this Japanese wheel on it. And everybody was like, oh, how dare you? You know, you should put Kragers.
I know.
You know, like, American wheels, don't put those Japanese crap wheels. And then they don't even realize that Corvette wheels are not even made in the US, right?
Factory. It's funny, though, as a wheel guy, I think I'm more obsessed with the actual wheel fitment than I am about what's on there. I mean, don't get me wrong. Some things just don't look right in certain cars. But if you really take almost any wheel and you get it to look really tough, you know, you get it right to the edge of where it needs to be, you know, really meet up the tire so that you don't, like, you know, short the tire, stretch the tire, make it look like it wasn't supposed to be there. You can make anything.
And the proper width.
Yeah, you can make it anything look really tough. But, yeah, no, I agree with you that when they did that Mustang, you know, I mean, you can remember it's so period correct for that part of it. I can't believe I'm saying period correct for that movie. You know, the Spearco front, you know, front mount intercooler kind of poking its way through. Like, these were things like back in these Nopey type days when that movie came out, that, like, these were companies that were really hard on the scene, you know?
Yep.
So, I actually, just total side note, I actually watched it the other day and realized that Falcon had one of their sponsored cars in that movie. I didn't realize that when they were doing that big
the drift
scene. Toge or whatever it is, and I forget the dude's name, but him and the girl, the main characters, they were all going up the hill.
Sean Boswell.
Sure. They had the Falcon RX-7 going up with them, which I thought was pretty cool. Anyway.
So right hand drive.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you guys can see this, but I mean, I think the wheel is what's making the car.
Look at that.
Oh, so, the super advans. Right?
Yeah.
That's what's going on the vet. Yes.
Oh my
That's God, wild,
that's
man.
So cool.
It's, you know, like it. So the idea of the Corvette is like, what if like somebody in the 90s, when Supras are, you know, are like a cool thing, like that's like the top car.
Yeah.
You know, and this kind of wheel, like, you know, 90s wheels was, that was what everybody wanted, you know, like, what if somebody built a Corvette like if it was a Supra?
Right.
This somebody obviously lives in Japan. That's why he wants right-hand drive, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, this is, I mean, no, listen, it is cool hearing you explain the thought process behind it. So
it's called mental gymnastics. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, you clearly need them to be able to try to get through this.
Duh.
But so now dash wise, are you going to just do everything in fiberglass? You're going to make your own dash kind of thing? Is there a starting point? Like, how do you get going there?
Well, the dashboard on the C3 is very similar. So
right.
It's very easy to just chop it, flip it, and put it back together. Obviously, it'll take some work.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, any interior repair guy knows that you can, you know, really mask seams and do a lot of that, you know, blowing work to get it to kind of.
Yeah. So, you know, like easy.
Yeah, easy.
Have a set of bright seats. They were kind enough to sponsor the build.
Right.
So, you know, like. Very grateful,
yeah,
Brian,
right.
And many brands have actually came up and supported the build. I feel bad because I haven't been able to put it out yet.
Yeah. Right.
And I wanted it to be ready for SEMA, but then SEMA didn't even happen. So it's kind of like at the same time, I was like, well, I mean, kind of lucky
God.
That it didn't because,
yeah.
And you know,
I'm
like,
ready.
Well, yeah. And I think they deserve like the big showcase that they're you know, they're trying to help with. They deserve like a full blown showcase of their product. But yeah, you know, like the Corvettes, they're all fiberglass, and I do fiberglass as a, you know, with 2F.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna be making a lot of stuff, just to unique parts for the car. Had the advantage of getting some carbon fiber parts that they already exist for the C3s.
Wow.
So the market is out there. I mean, I think Corvettes are very underrated. Like, people still think that they're like old people cars, and they're not. They're not. They're. I don't know if you guys seen the C4 Corvette that came out last year with the Advan wheels as well.
Oh, what was that?
From
like Sweden,
Bjork.
Or something like that?
Yeah, he's in Sweden. Bjork.
It's like basically a rocket bunny.
Yeah,
almost.
Well,
in the
yeah,
sense,
it's
it like
a
wide bodied that
yeah,
that,
with
that really,
you know,
nice
the fins
teal.
On the side.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That thing was
yeah,
cool.
it was super rad. And these are cars that, you know, people just like, I don't want a C4. And then you see that it's like, oh, maybe I do.
I thought about selling the Baja for a second.
Don't ever sell that Baja. But if you sell it to me because I love that thing.
I should.
Your Baja is beautiful. I love it.
I should have guessed.
Yeah,
it was right,
man.
In,
you
it was right
why,
in line.
You see why we're best friends now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We understand each other.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly. I feel like Jared's conversations internally when we debate cars, it really does go in complete different opposite directions.
Yeah.
But
that's the beauty of it, right? Like,
it
have variety of opinions. And
yeah.
Right?
Well, I think that's so much of the basis behind the car community in itself, is that you have a whole bunch of people that build vehicles and they kind of, I don't want to say follow trends. It's not the right way of putting it, but they're very, they have to see it for it to be something that they want, right? Like, they have to see it on something and say that that's what I want to do. And then you have so many people that they're just determined to do their own thing. And I think that's where the beauty comes out of so many project cars and so many builds, that when we look at it, we're like, oh, wait a minute, that's super off the charts. Like, that's what puts it in its own league, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like with everything in life, there's leaders and there's followers.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with being either or.
I agree.
You know, there's, you know, like, every, like, you've seen, I mean, you guys, again, you're in the wheel business. how many times you see the meme like, oh, what are your wheel specs? What are your fit? You know, like trying to get the fitment from somebody else because they can't even do the math. But I know like a lot of people takes offense from that, where it should be actually like, oh, you know, I'm actually, I have a chance to educate somebody. So maybe not just straight up, just do this, but educate somebody, you know, like, well, the offset works this way. I mean, I myself, I had a lot of work from friends helping me understand offset and fitment and all that stuff, because to me, that's still kind of like uncharted territory. So, you know, we might be leaders on some point, but we are followers on another different point. And it's just understanding that it's okay to share and help each other. And like, I think that's one of the reasons why I like the car community. It's usually like, I mean, most of my friends today, I met them because of the car community. My business partner, you know, because of drifting. And I met Gerald because of drifting and car community. I mean, you know,
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, I think some of my fondest memories growing up were the, you know, we used to call them like car barbecues, because it was like, you know, it was always, it seemed to always gravitate that there would be one person working on a project that was so far away from ever being done. And he would call for some help. And next thing you know, you'd get 10, 12 guys together. And then all of a sudden there was a bunch of pizzas and it lasted all day. And it turned into a barbecue at night. But there was like six or seven different, you know, somebody would have a blow-off valve. Oh, I got to put this blow-off valve on. And somebody would have, you know, the front mount. And then, so there'd be like three or four different workstations where people would just kind of like break out.
And you'd have like two guys rotating around each project. Like, oh, here, let me help with this wrench here.
But the fact is, like with car people, they tend to want to help with nothing asked, just because about helping. You know what I mean?
Yep.
We've seen that in drifting. Like, when I think about it, I mean, yeah, they're friends. But like when I think about Travis Reeder and Dylan Hughes, just a couple years ago, when Dylan stuffs it into the wall in the last event, and Travis kind of took his car apart to, you know,
cannibalized.
I think that's one of those things that's really cool about the drift community too. Is that really down in the surface of it, there's so many people that are so about the community that even competitors will help each other out.
See, like that's something that I just remember since, like, you know, like racing, like just regular racing back in the day. You know, the terminology of, you know, it's a gentleman's race. Yeah. You know, like drivers, as rough as they can be, they're still known for some sort of etiquette, and we see that in a lot of these great movies, you know, Ford versus Ferrari, or you know, the one with Thor. I can't remember the name right now. You know, there's a friendship behind the racing, right? Because these are the people that you're touring the entire world with. Even though you're racing against each other, once you're off the track, there's no real need to be enemies, right? And you share the same passions. You share, you know, your love for cars. And I just think that everything is better. Like I say, everything is better with a little bit of honey, you know? You're going to have a better time if you're friendly with people, instead of trying to be this elitist. Or elitist, of, you know, like, well, I'm a drifter, and like you know, everybody else suck. Like, no, you know, like things are better when you bring people together and find reasons for us to be together, especially 2020, 2021. You know, everybody's divided because everybody's opinions about, I want to make my car this color. And like, well, no, you're wrong. You should have made it this other color. It's like, no, like, you know, we need to understand that we're all different, and we're never going to have the exact same thoughts, but at least we can agree that, for example, in our case, we love cars and we love working on them, or we love driving them, or we love looking at them, and we can appreciate that in particular, you know? And
yeah.
I don't know, it's good.
Like, it's, I think it's so much of the shared sentiment that we do with our, with like with our content, right? Like, yeah, right. There's Koenig, and that's a company, but like a lot of the things that we do is we spend so much time just trying to put information about things in general. Like our, the Koenig thing, really, we really don't bring it too much into our content at all. I mean, we get to have these cool car conversations with people like you, but we also get to, you know, put out videos about wheel offset where we don't, you know, of course we may use a Koenig wheel to demonstrate the offset or do different things, but we're able to kind of go, you know, make this content to put information out there to make it easy for people to understand. And the truth is, if they use it to go get another wheel brand's product, that's cool. Like at the end of the day, we are a bunch of car guys around the office, and being able to kind of do stuff that allows us to kind of just be part of the car community and be involved with drifting, be involved with, you know, Grid Life and Time Attack and a lot of these great series that are what helps keep this industry going forward is just such a cool thing. It's like, it really is like an honor to be able to kind of do this stuff and just have a good time with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I never thought, you know, I would be so involved in the community.
Yeah.
If you have asked me back in the day, you know, like, oh, just, I like cars, so that's it. But
right.
I think if you're passionate about anything and you pursue that passion and, you know, like you'll eventually get there. It's just, you know, there's always going to be people telling you, no, you can't do it. There's no way, you know, you're going to start a company, whatever. Just keep, you know, keep a job. But, you know, just if it works, like, I guess, like as a piece of advice, you know, it's like the whole, I know it sounds cliche, the whole follow your dreams, but follow the dreams.
Yeah.
You know, it, worst case is that
you'll spend it won't work. You'll be broke.
Well, I want to touch on one more topic quickly.
Yeah, man.
Which is, you know, you obviously do the body kit stuff with 2F, but I've always been fascinated with the whole panel replacement thing that you have going on.
Oh.
What spawned that?
So, well, drifting, it's quite known for, you know, like for dirt drivers trying to ride the wall, right. You know, like that's the equivalent of making a skateboard trick,
right.
You know, like going against the wall and get as close as possible and drag, you know, the rear bumper, drag the back of the car. And Chris Soren, my partner, and I, like one of the things that we're always working on is like we're always fixing the rear of the car.
Yeah.
Now it's like one of the things, like, okay, you hit the wall too hard, the whole rear is crunched, you have to hammer it, you have to cut it, you have to put panels. It's like, and one day we were both talking, it's like, wouldn't it be so nice just to have like a complete fiberglass rear that you could just replace and remove, and just like with, you know, with almost every other racing, there's complete fiberglass bodies.
Yeah.
You know? So we started thinking about it. It's like, well, I mean, we already do fiberglass. We could totally do this. Right. Started like, you know, like it started like looking at, okay, well, let's get one car and let's try to make a whole rear of fiberglass. And while we're at it, we also added a little bit of a flare for the wheels because right. We know most drifters will want that flare and like that wider wheel and all the fitment. So let's include that. And you know, it worked. It you know, everybody started like, oh, we want it for this car, we want it for this car, we want it for this car. So we started like trying to make them for as many cars as possible, and we're still making more. Like right now we're working on the 350Z, and you know, very simple idea. And we wanted to be able to make it look like when you remove the bumper, make it look like there's still a normal car there.
Right.
So when we make our panels, we also try to put some of the inside shapes of the factory sheet metal. Right. Like I know some people like the bumperless look and put like chassis mounted wings, and yeah. You can see that. So it was like, okay, we can bring that, and if somebody else don't need all that, they can cut it all out.
Right.
And it has the buckets for the taillights integrated. So same thing, you know, like now if you smash one of your panels, you just unbolt, put a new one, and you're good to go.
That's so cool.
I think it's so funny. Like, the idea comes apart, but you're like, I wish somebody, wouldn't it be fun if somebody, like, a body kick company made this thing? You're like, oh, wait a minute, what body kick company? We can do this.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking at quickly on the questions here. So it looks like, so somebody said, did you know fiberglass when you first, did you know how to fiberglass when you first got started with the whole, I guess we're going to go back to the Corvette bumper kind of thing. Or was this like a trial and error, you know, left itching your arms kind of thing. And you're like, oh.
Well, funny thing is, like, I hate fiberglass.
Right.
I hate working with fiberglass.
Yeah, I get it.
But.
This guy has a body kick company and he hates fiberglass.
And I hate fiberglass. You know, like, I own a chocolate company, but I hate chocolate. In school, when I was starting design, I learned all kinds of materials and working with fiberglass, working with polymers, and working with all kind of like chemistry, and I call it design alchemy. And so I knew fiberglass. I wasn't an expert in it, and I'm still not an expert on it. Like, we at this point, we have experts doing the fiberglass work for us.
Right.
But Chris and I, we still do the modeling, and that's where I think my expertise is, on modeling and shaping things by hand. Chris's expertise is the fine tuning. He pretty much every single part that we make before it even becomes a mold, he makes the part perfect. He owns a body shop, and he paints Ferraris and Lamborghinis, and his attention to detail is impeccable. So for us, our plugs, which is what you call the part before making a mold, it literally, he goes the extra mile to making sure that thing is perfectly straight and smooth like a baby's butt, and it just, you know, fitment. We always use factory sheet metal to make our parts. So factory fenders, factory bumpers, factory everything, to make sure that everything is within factory spec. Because every now and then we get people like, oh, your bumper didn't fit my fenders. Like, well, what fenders do you have? And then it turns out that there's some, you know, questionable brand aftermarket. Yeah.
But, eBay.
But yeah, exactly. So he makes things look perfect. And then our fiberglass guys are old school. Dude, these guys are like legit. Like, this is what they've done their whole life. And they know fiberglass upside down, and they love it, and they are passionate about it. So all our products, you know, they're made locally by local hands. And, you know, how do you say that? Yeah, we don't outsource anything. Like, everything is just local, and we strive to give the most quality possible, you know, which is why our kits are not the cheapest.
Yeah.
But we work hard on making sure that everything that we make fits good, looks good, is not going to warp, it's not going to break, it's not going to sag with the years. The fiberglass, the resin, the gel coat, all the materials that we use are top tier. And it flexes where it needs to flex. It's hard when it needs to be hard. You know, it's definitely there's a process to make sure that, you know, that these products leave our company with that. You know, like, if it wasn't like that, we wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's an interesting part, though, because when you really think about it, I mean, so many things in that little part of the story, there's so many things that really you can apply to everything you do, right? Like, so much of this starts with the R&D in that first plug. Because I've even had experiences like building some of the, you know, vehicles for SEMA over the years, where Honda would give us a car or whatever, we get pre-production parts, and, you know, I mean, they're done, they're finished cars, they're complete, everything's fine, but there's little modifications or things that happen. And so, you know, getting that first part, you know, perfect is what you're going to be basing all your parts off of. So, you know, you get a car that you're building a plug off of, and some of these car companies, they'll source a car out, and the car had been hit before and then pulled, so there's a little tolerance off there when they build the plug. Or you get a car that, like you said, has an aftermarket fender or quarter panel or something, or that throws that stuff out of the whack. your end product isn't as good. But so that R&D time is huge, right? Putting in the prep work and laying the foundation to turn out a good product. And then what's that famous saying that you can't, you can have, you know, fast, cheap, and quality, but you can only pick two, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you can't have all three. So, you know, I think it's definitely, and we've spoken about this a number of times in different capacities about, you know, buyer beware, because there really is a responsibility of the buyer. And, you know, if you're picking a shop, if you're buying parts, it's your job as the person that's kind of facilitating this build to do your homework and make sure that you invest and put your time and your money into a place that's going to do a good job, that knows what they're doing, and the parts that you need for your car are quality and they're good. You can't have them all, so pick one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think especially with today's Amazon and, you know, all these online stores where you buy something, it's on your door next day.
Right.
Like people are grown used to this mindset of, I want it now, you know, and I need it to be cheap.
Right.
And you know, it in to me, that's kind of like it does a disservice on the product, you know.
Oh wait, I hear myself.
Hold on, we're back.
Hey,
you gotta switch the microphone. Yeah, we're good.
There you go. I can't hear you guys. And...
Oh, hello. Man, you could tell that we are just not pros at this. Terrible.
Dude, like I said, you know, like being in the podcast business for years.
Yeah.
Unless you have like Joe Rogan's equipment, like $100,000 worth of equipment, it's always going to happen something.
Yeah.
Without fail. But all right, we're back.
Yeah.
So there you go.
What are we talking about now?
I think it was just, we were talking about the whole life lesson of... that Paco just ran through with us. But anyhow, so do we have any more other questions? Because I think we lost that thing.
Yeah, I feel like there were.
What's the matter,
a
Alex?
Bunch.
Alex is running around. Scares the crap out of me when he starts running around.
Oh boy.
What's not turning?
I would lie if I say I haven't done that.
Paco, can you see us?
I only see bars of colors.
Oh yes. Yeah.
But I can hear you.
This is terrible.
Oh no.
Well, I get, we can start over.
I know.
Hello. Me llamo Paco.
Right. Right. We're starting over. All right. Alex,
well,
we're
wait, I think he's just
swapping a battery.
Batteries, and then he should be able to see us. Bear with us here.
I feel like when we do this podcast, we often end up in a situation of finding the weakest link, right? we go and then we find another impossible task that we couldn't imagine would have been a problem. And, you know.
And literally every week is different.
Yep.
Oh,
my best piece of advice, hardwire everything.
I know we're trying to get better at all of that, and we have adapters and things flowing all over the place now. But yeah, we're slowly climbing into it. What do you think, Alex? Are we dead in the water here? Or are we? We're on.
Well, let's see. Hold on.
Not really.
We got color bars, but
hold on, Alex.
He's seeing a camera, so
there you go.
Oh, we're back.
Well, he
except
sees
for
us.
You. Who's you?
You.
The
is
video.
Me.
The color swap.
That's us.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but he's saying
you guys are live. Welcome to Maximum Koenig Wheels. Today we have Scott and Jared.
Yo,
welcome, boys.
That's why, listen, just in case anybody wonders, that's why we bring trained professionals in to do this stuff with us. So that when we can't get our stuff together, somebody else sure can. But with that said, we had some questions. I don't know.
Yeah,
there
were a lot, and I'd really like to try and get to some.
I don't know how many there were, but I know there was definitely about the fiberglass and some other things. I think we may have used Paco's time here.
Oh,
so,
no.
For you guys, I have all the time in the world.
Geez, that's so kind of you. I really appreciate you taking the time to do it, though. I know you're in the middle of work and different things. We're clearly on a different time schedule because we're on the East Coast.
Right.
So
something something I learned from one of my co-hosts, Sam Nalbin.
Yes.
Yeah, also known as Drift Idiot. he's the embodiment of making things work. You know, he started, you know, like doing this whole thing with me. Like, you know, he was doing his Drift Idiot videos.
Yeah.
The same time that I was doing the Tofu Van drifting thing. And, you know, he was just a guy with the car and he started making videos. And look at him. He's now, you know, making videos from the Nürburgring and hanging out with all the F1 drivers.
It's so funny because my first exposure to Sam was his YouTube channel, The Drift Idiot, when he started doing, he was doing that, and then he was also, then he started doing with Chris when they did the build-up of Sam's S-Chassis, and then...
Oh, that was already when he was out in L.A., race service.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And well, no, they didn't have race service yet.
So that was it, Donut?
It was Donut.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So then, right. And so... Then even before that, he was doing, you know, he used to go to the FD events and get those weird videos with the drivers where they used to try to like beat
driver
him up and throw
driver.
Him out of the car.
Yes. One of the best series on YouTube.
I really feel like it needed to come back. I don't know where it is, but it needs to come back.
I've actually been on set with him shooting and he's nuts. The guy is he's really good at what he does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. He has a work ethic that, you know, is definitely, you know, it paid off for him.
Yeah.
And like one of the things, like, you know, like one of the things I've learned from him is, you know, that motto that people probably learn it from somewhere else as well, but you know, the show must go on.
Yeah.
And whatever happens is going to make it happen, but just
right.
You know, the people need to be entertained, so we shall entertain.
Yeah. Well, I question some of his decisions because he sold. because he sold a beautiful 04 STI to buy an M2.
That car was tired, dude. That's his forever car.
I'm a Subi guy, so all Subarus are.
Yeah, me too. But he deserved a nice car. He deserved a nice commute.
He does.
And we're not talking about like the M2 is a cool car.
I know.
You know, and
very cool.
I think it. We did this we do this little thing we've been starting to put out, this Hype is Right thing, right?
Yeah.
And so one of the cars that we had a few weeks ago was the M2.
Yeah.
And I still think the car is underhyped because not even for the, I'm not talking about price tag wise, but underhyped in the sense that like the car still, I don't think gets the same love that the M3s get. And I'll tell you, those M2s, they really boogie.
They
like
boogie,
BMW knows how to make a car.
I think the M2 is what the M3 used to be.
Right. Right.
Because
now the M3 is getting so much bigger.
Or the M4 now. I mean,
right.
Because obviously everybody has to mess up the good things that they have.
Yeah.
So let's just change the names and let's just change everything. And now nothing makes sense.
So my dad, this is like a random story, but my dad finally gets to a point in his life where he retires and he has decided that for the first time ever, he wants to go buy a brand new car. He's never bought a brand new car, always bought a used car. So he retires and he goes to BMW and he's going to buy himself a brand new BMW. That's his thing. And he's so happy that he can break every car guy's heart with the rules of this. He's gonna write a check. He's going to buy it out. You know, he doesn't want to finance. He wants to write the check.
Yeah.
So he's looking at these cars, and he keeps looking at these, you know, the 4 Series and all these things like that. And I'm just like, meanwhile, I'm sitting in one of the M340s, and I'm like, no, it's this one. He's like, it's 4-door. I was like, who cares? This car, this is the car. Like, it had everything. And he's like, and then we saw an M2, and I was like, you know what? Even if you're going to do it with the M2, and they're all cheaper than this 4 Series he bought. And I'm just like, I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me.
I get that.
I think it needs to be 2 doors. 2-door everything. Like if there's a model that comes in both 2 doors and 4 doors, always go with a 2-door.
Yeah. All right. That's fair. But I mean,
yeah.
Looking at the M4, I mean, looking at the, it wasn't M4. Looking at the 4 Series that he has versus that M340.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. It was, that M340 is a cool car. Anyhow. personal opinions aside. Listen, I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us. You certainly don't know anything, and it's cool to be able to, you know, have conversations with other car people.
Even though he can't see us now anymore.
I'm watching you guys on the live stream, actually.
Thank God. If you're going to pick one to not be on.
I'm just watching with a delay, so sorry if I'm a little behind. No, I still can hear you.
That's awesome. That's all right. I don't think anything about this podcast that is a pro is having to look at me on camera.
Yeah.
But I appreciate you doing it. If there's anything that we could ever help you out with, we are here to help.
Much appreciated, man. Same wise.
Appreciate it. Well, thanks so much. And we're going to make sure this week that we actually do this. We're going to put all your social stuff and the 2F performance links and stuff in the description just to kind of let people go check out where they can get it. Most likely, if they're listening, they already know exactly where they can find all your stuff. So, I don't know what to say. But, hey, listen, that's what we do.
Thank you. Much appreciated. I really had a good time. And let me know next time. I'll be more than happy to be here again.
Awesome. Paco, thanks so much, man. Have a good week.
Thank you. Same to you guys and everybody who's watching. Thanks for being here.
Right. Take care.
Hey, have a good one.
Later, man.
Cool. That was cool, man. I had a good time. It's fun. I don't know, Paco personally.
Right.
I know of him. So being able to kind of have, some conversation with him and be able to kind of get to know some of his things that you already knew because you were pretty good friends with him.
Right.
It was a good time. That's what I love about this stuff. It's just being able to have the conversations with other car people.
Yeah. And I just get to bring my friends on and we all get to kind of talk.
Yeah. And any day that you get to talk about your Baja is a good day.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Anytime I can plug that Baja.
Anyhow, let's see. Before we get out of here, if you're already still hanging out with us, make sure you subscribe. That'd be cool. On top of that, make sure you look out for this Friday. We'll have another piece of content going up. And as always, we are here 3 p.m. Eastern live when we record the podcast. And if you're bored about an hour before this, 2 p.m. Eastern, we go live on Instagram and Facebook, answer all your questions about wheels or somewhat related topics every Wednesday as well. Thanks for hanging out with us. We will catch you next week. Peace out.